force before the beginning. The ancient collection of texts from India known as the Vedas are among the world's oldest scriptures and believed by some scholars to date back as far as 7,000 years. In what is perhaps the best-known scripture, the Rig Veda, there's a description of a force that underlies all of creation and from which all things are formed, the force that existed before the beginning. This force, named Brahman, is described as the unborn in whom all existing things abide. Further in the text, it becomes clear that all things exist because the one manifest as the many, according to the text, the formless, putting on forms. Well, in a very different language, we could think of the divine matrix in precisely the same way, as the force that happens before the other forces. It's the container that holds the universe, as we mentioned earlier, as well as the blueprint for everything that can happen in our physical world. Because it's the stuff the universe is made of, it stands to reason that it's existed since the beginning of creation. And if this is the case, then the logical question is, why haven't scientists found evidence of that matrix before now? This very good question is one that I've asked scientists and researchers investigating this field every opportunity that I get. And each time I ask, the response is so similar, I can almost predict what's about to happen. First, there's a look of disbelief that I could in any way imply that science somehow missed something as important as a field of energy that connects everything in creation. Next, the discussion turns to equipment and technology. We simply have not had the technology to detect such a field, is what they say. It's the way the answer usually goes. While this may be true at some point, for at least the last 100 years, we have had the equipment and we have had the ability to build detectors that would tell us the divine matrix or the ether or the web of creation or whatever we choose to call it exists. So it may be more accurate to say that the greatest stumbling block to our discovery of the divine matrix has been less about the equipment and more about the reluctance of mainstream science to acknowledge that it's there. This primal force of energy, the divine matrix, provides the essence for all that we experience and create. It holds the key to unraveling the deepest mysteries of who we are, as well as answering the oldest question about how things work in our world. The divine matrix. The experiments show that the matrix is made of an energy form that's unlike any kind of energy that we've ever known in the past. Maybe that's why it took so long for scientists to find it. It's called subtle energy, and it simply does not work the way that typical fields of electricity or magnetism work. The field that connects everything appears to be a tightly woven web. It makes up what we now call the fabric of creation, the divine matrix. There are three attributes that set the divine matrix apart from any other energy of its kind. First, it can be described as being everywhere all the time. It already exists. Unlike a broadcast from a television or a radio station that has to be created in one place before being sent somewhere else to be received, this field already exists everywhere. Secondly, it appears that this field began when creation began, with the Big Bang, or whatever we choose to call the beginning. Obviously, no one was here to tell us what existed before the beginning, but scientists believe that the massive release of energy that jolted our universe into existence was the very act of creating space itself. As the hymn of creation from the ancient Rig Veda suggests, before the beginning, not even nothing existed then, no air yet, and no heaven. So as the existence of nothing exploded into the something of space, the stuff between the nothing was born. So we can think of this divine matrix as the echo of that moment in time, and a link made of space and time that does connect us with the beginning of everything. The third characteristic of this field, and perhaps the one that makes it so meaningful in our lives, is that it appears to have intelligence. In other words, the field responds to us. It responds to thoughts, feelings, emotions, beliefs, the power of human emotion. In the language of another time, ancient traditions did their very best to share this great secret with us. Inscribed in the temple walls, pinned upon time-worn parchments, and engineered into the lives of the people themselves, for centuries, those who came before us left the instructions that tell us how to communicate with the energy that connects everything. In a non-verbal language, Our ancestors tried to show us how to heal our bodies and how to breathe life into our deepest desires and greatest dreams. It's only now, nearly 5,000 years after the first of those instructions was recorded, that the ancient language is now recognized by science. Science is rediscovering the very same relationships between us and our world. The energy found in the new experiments is so new that scientists have yet to agree on a single term to describe it. So there are many different names that are being used to identify this field that connects everything. Edgar Mitchell, for example, the former Apollo astronaut, calls it nature's mind. A physicist and co-author of the superstring theory, Dr. Michio Kaku, calls it the quantum hologram. And while these are modern names for the cosmic force that's believed to be responsible for the universe, we find similar themes and even similar words in texts created thousands of years before quantum physics. Dating to the 4th century AD, for example, the Gnostic Gospels also use the word mind to describe this great force and how, from what they called the power of the silence, appeared a greater power, the mind of the universe, which manages all things. Well, as different as the names sound from one another, all of them appear to be describing the same thing. The living essence, it's the fabric of our reality. It's this mind as well that Max Planck made reference to in his famous speech in the mid-20th century. Beyond any reasonable doubt, the experiments in the previous discussion show us that this matrix exists, regardless of what we choose to call it, or which laws of physics it may or may not conform to. The field that connects everything in creation is real. It's here in this very instant. It exists as you and me. It is the universe within us as well as the universe around us. It's the quantum bridge between all that is possible in our minds and what becomes real in our world. The matrix of energy that explains why the three experiments work as they do also explains why the positive feelings and prayers within us can be so powerful in the world around us. But our connection to the matrix of all matter doesn't stop there. It continues into the things that you can't see. The divine matrix is everywhere. It's everything, from the bird that's flying through the space high above you in this very moment to the cosmic particles that pass through our bodies and homes as if we were empty space. All exist within the same container of reality. It is what space itself is made of. When you think about the matrix and wonder where it may be, you can rest assured that wherever space exists, the matrix is there. Through the divine matrix, we're all connected in the most intimate way imaginable. But what does that connection really mean? What does it mean to be so deeply enmeshed with our world and one another's lives that we share the pure space where imagination lives and reality is born? If we're more than simply casual onlookers watching as our lives and the world happen around us, then just how much more? Well, the previous discoveries demonstrate that there is a power within each of us. It's unlike any power ever created by a machine in the laboratory. It's a power that is unbound by the laws of physics, at least not the physics that we understand today. But we don't need a laboratory experiment to know that this connection exists. How many times, for example, have you gone to call someone on the phone, someone that you care about, and when you pick up the phone and you dial, you discover that they're already on the line? Or when you dialed that number, you discovered the line was busy because your friend was already calling you? Or how many times have you found yourself enjoying time with friends or in a busy street or a mall or an airport, only to have that eerie feeling that you've already been in that place or with those people before, doing exactly what you're doing in that moment? While these are simple examples and they're fun to talk about, they're more than just random coincidences. Although we may not be able to prove scientifically why these things happen, we all know that they do. And in such moments of connectedness and deja vu, we find ourselves spontaneously transcending the limits of science as we know them today, our physical laws. In those brief instances, we're reminded there's probably more to the universe and certainly more to us than we consciously acknowledge. And that's the same power that tells us that we're more than just observers in this world. The key to experiencing ourselves as more than observers is to create those experiences on purpose, to create them intentionally, to have our transcendent insights when we choose to have them rather than when they just seem to happen. It all comes down to what we believe about ourselves and our role in the universe. And that is what the next section is all about. We are creators. And even more than that, we're connected creators. Through the divine matrix, we participate in the constant change that gives meaning to life. The question now is less about whether or not we're passive observers and more about how we can intentionally create in our world.